Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Monday, March 21st. Here's one thing I don't have to tell you to begin the week. If you own a car or if you're a truck driver, the cost of gasoline has been going up and up and up. And with the energy embargo on Russia, gasoline prices are going up even faster than with plain old American domestic inflation. Now, Democratic and Republican governors alike are starting to talk about what is called a gasoline tax holiday. Governor Murphy in New Jersey, Governor Hochul in New York, Governor Lamont in Connecticut, which is to say liberal governors in the Northeast, not to mention in 22 states overall, I've seen it reported, are among them. Here's Governor Ned Lamont last week.
Now is the time to provide immediate relief, aid to the people of Connecticut broadly in terms of inflationary pressures, and specifically as regards drivers getting hit at the pump.
But are gasoline tax holidays a good idea? New York Times economics columnist Peter Coy, in his latest column, says no. In fact, the headline on his piece says, "Cut the gas tax. No, no, no." We'll talk to Peter Coy now about why he gives the idea three thumbs down and also about some of the other economic headlines so integral to what's going on right now that he's also written about. The Federal Reserve Board saying they will raise interest rates six times this year and the effectiveness or not of economic sanctions on Russia that hurt everybody else. Peter, thanks for coming on. Welcome back to WNYC.
Well, thanks, Brian. It's been a while. I used to talk to you when I was at Bloomberg Businessweek, joined the Times last summer, so this is fun. Glad you have me on. You're a daily fixture in our household.
Well, thank you. That it's very good to know, and glad to see you have joined the esteemed New York Times. I hope that's a good thing for you. Now, why are you a three times no on cutting gasoline taxes?
Well, no reason to stop at one time, right? As long as you're going to be negative, you might as well be definitively negative. There are a lot of reasons. One is that, you know, think about it. First of all, I have to say a little sympathy for the problem. You're right that the gasoline tax, the high gasoline prices are hurting a lot of people. And there's ought to be some way to relieve the pain. But is a gas tax holiday the right solution? And that's where I would argue no. Think about it on a lot of reasons. Why do we have a gas tax in the first place? Well, part of it is because the gas tax funds work on roads, repairs, construction, and that's effectively a user tax. So the people who use the roads by driving their gasoline-powered vehicles should pay for the upkeep of them.
Can I stop you right there? Because Governor Hochul in New York actually expressed some ambivalence about the idea of a gas tax holiday the other day, though she said she's considering it. Here's a clip of Governor Hochul on why she's ambivalent.
We understand that this is, you know, one area we should be looking at. We are looking at it. But I also know that many of our funds are for roads and bridges, and the people who are calling for the end of the gas tax are also asking for more money for infrastructure.
So that goes right to what you were just saying, right? The people who are calling for the gasoline tax holiday are the same people who use the roads, and some of this tax is dedicated to highway and other roads infrastructure.
Exactly. And in some cases, it's actually a legal thing. There are covenants in bond issues that are used to raise money for roads, bridges, and so on that require that money, to a certain amount of money to be devoted to that. So it's actually the governor, you hear the governors talking a lot about holidays, but in some cases, they may not be able to do it legally. They're probably getting some advice from the lawyers on that.
Huh.
So that's one thing. But then another is all the so-called externalities, as economists like to say, caused by driving a vehicle, in particular a gasoline-powered vehicle, air pollution, with local air pollution, as well as greenhouse gases that cause global warming. congestion in the roads, accidents. Now, there's a separate conversation we could have some other day about electric vehicles, because they don't cause local air pollution, but they do cause other problems. I mean, they're still consuming electricity. They're still involved in congestion and accidents. So people talk about using a vehicle miles tax instead of a gasoline tax, but I don't want to go there right now because that's really a completely separate and equally interesting
issue. Well, you do have some suggestions in your column for better ways to ease the pain of inflation that that government can help with. But before we get there, let's complete the thought that I think you just started about climate. Do you think that this can be an opportunity to move more quickly off fossil fuels spurred by economic incentives? Or is that an environmentalist's dream that's really a longer-term project and can't be done at the snap of a finger?
Yeah, I'm more in the latter camp. It can't be done in the snap of a finger. Also, if you're trying to raise fuel prices in order to alleviate climate change, the way to do it is actually, say, raising taxes rather than putting more money into the pockets of the producers of fuel, OPEC and, you know, the Western multinational oil companies. That's what's happening now. The producers of oil are the ones who are benefiting from this, the tightness in the market, the fact that Russia's production or sales have gone down and so on. So, yeah,
Let me linger on that one, because that's a very interesting aspect of what's going on now that maybe people haven't thought about so much. Some of our listeners probably have, but maybe isn't being reported by a lot of the media so much. We hear about things like some of the major oil companies pulling out of Russia and people saying, oh, even some of the oil companies are willing to do the right thing and not do business with Russia and take that hit on their bottom lines. Are you saying this is actually good for the major oil companies?
Well, having to withdraw from Russia is not good for them. A lot of them have invested a lot of money there. I think they're getting out mostly because they just look at Putin's irrational behavior in Ukraine and say, this guy could do anything. He could nationalize us. Let's get out while the getting is good. Let's write off our investment, admit this did not turn out well. But Russia's just not a good place to be doing business these days. And it also is a way to salute the flag. So they kind of, it's a win-win for them to
good
get
public
out.
Public relations.
Yeah. But, you know, but I give them some credit that they care about the horrific destruction in Ukraine. And so I'm sure that's a factor as well. I don't be too cynical.
But what about their bottom line? Are they passing all this pain on to drivers, or are oil company profits going down? I haven't looked at oil company stocks lately. in fact, I can't remember the last time I looked at oil company stocks. But how are they? How are they doing?
Yeah, they pass along.
You know, in general.
The oil companies are able to pass along the higher prices for crude in higher prices at the pump. In fact, there's historically a pattern where if the price of crude goes up, price of gasoline goes up immediately. Whereas when the price of crude goes down, the price of gasoline goes down more slowly. So it's a net benefit. The volatility ends up being a net benefit to them.
Mm-hmm. Right, because nobody makes them do it. In fact, how can people tell, government regulators or individuals, if they're being price gouged at the pump or anywhere else for that matter at this time of rising prices? But let's stay on gasoline for the moment. If the producers and even the gas stations themselves, the local gas stations, are going to make the same amount of profit by passing on X cents per gallon extra in costs to the drivers. But they say, well, I could do that, but I could raise it another 20 cents per gallon because right now nobody's going to notice and people are just going to have to pay it. And then that's price gouging. How does anybody know?
Yeah. There is something called a crack spread, which is the difference between the price of gasoline and the price of the products that go into the gasoline. The Energy Information Administration of the U.S. Department of Energy also tracks prices. And so you can see over time what's happening to the profits of at the retail level, at the wholesale level of gasoline. And I have to admit, before we came on the air here, I didn't really do that. So I don't know if to the degree to that's happening right now. But, you know, there's obviously the solution to that in the long run is competition. And there is some but limited competition in gasoline markets. There's a handful of big companies that dominate the distribution, the retail end of gasoline in the United States. Funnily enough, Lukoil is one of the, and they're kind of like booted out of the market now, effectively, if not legally. Lukoil being owned by the Russians. Mm. I would say, you know, we're ranging pretty widely here, but I would definitely say that gasoline prices are elevated in a way that's here. Let me put it this way. One of the readers of my newsletter wrote to me and said, hey, you know, this whole idea of trying to protect people from the higher gasoline prices, maybe we shouldn't be protecting from that. Maybe that's just the price we pay for the war that's going on now. And we didn't try to protect people from the costs of fighting World War II. Why should we be protecting from the costs of fighting the war in Ukraine?
Right. Although that might be a regressive solution that hurts poorer people and middle-class people more than it hurts people with the most money. Listeners, if you're just joining us, this wide-ranging conversation is with Peter Coy, New York Times economics columnist. We started on his latest column, which says, cut the gas tax. No, no, no. We've already touched on some other things. We'll get to other causes for inflation. We'll get to the Fed's interest rate hike last week with 6 total this year to come, they say, and whether that can or even maybe should cause a recession. The economic sanctions on Russia, are they helping to do the right thing in Ukraine, or are they just hurting everybody? And listeners, I see a lot of calls are coming in already without me even giving out the phone number. So for the rest of you who don't have us on speed dial, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for Peter Coy on any of those things. And Peter, before we start taking some phone calls, let's complete the thought that, yes, I took us down 3 or 4 different tangential rabbit holes away from, which is your alternative to cutting the gasoline tax and still easing people's inflationary pain.
No, thanks. Yeah, I want to at least cover that a little bit before people start telling me I got it all wrong. Well, so you still help people, but you do it with some sort of a general fund tax, sort of like the stimulus checks where they kind of go out to everybody, regardless of how much you drove last year or you're driving now. Maybe in some cases they're structured so you don't even have a car to get one of these checks. So the idea is like inflation is high overall. Gasoline stands out for being uniquely high, but we don't have to tell our listeners that overall inflation is high and people are suffering from it. So if at the same time, states are doing quite well financially. A lot of them are having surpluses. And so this is an excellent time for them to put some of that money back into their taxpayers' wallets. And you could structure this. So the gasoline tax, you alluded to this, is regressive in the sense that it hits poor people more than it hits rich people. So if you're trying to solve that problem without cutting the gasoline tax, you could do it by giving more of the money to poor, lower middle class people, and give little or none to rich people. So you'd be achieving two things. You'd be helping the reverse the effects of the gasoline high prices, but without causing more damage to the environment and taking money away from what's needed to repair roads and bridges.
Are gasoline taxes inherently regressive in the first place because they tend to be a flat number of cents per gallon rather than a percentage?
Correct. Rather than a percentage of your income, for example. But they're regressive in the sense that when I say regressive, we mean that they hit poor more than the rich. And that's true just because, except for the very poor who don't drive, in general, the pattern is that if you're wealthy, even if you drive a lot, even if you drive a fuel-guzzling car, gasoline is a small percentage of your overall consumption market basket. If you're poor, even if you try to economize, just because gasoline is going to be a bigger budget item for you, and so the high gasoline tax is going to hit you harder. And that's kind of what I'm trying to help out with here with another solution that, other than just cutting the gasoline tax.
Right. So you're talking about something, if I heard you right, like the early pandemic era stimulus
yep.
checks that would go out to people because everybody's experiencing inflation, whether they have cars or not, that would just go out to people on kind of an income graded way.
Yeah. And then, you know, the people who, for whom food is the killer item, well, okay, the money would help them with their food. For people for whom it's college tuition, okay, they'll spend it on college tuition. And there will be some people for whom gasoline is the killer. And okay, for them, it'll help cushion the blow of the high gasoline prices.
Renee and Wayne, you're on WNYC. Hi, Renee. So as we talk about gasoline taxes, we've hit Long Island, we've hit Rockland County. Now we're in Wayne. Hi, Renee.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I agree with Peter not to cut the gas tax. To allow people to make decisions of what type of cars they buy, to actually to get rid of some of the gas-guzzling ones and move towards more environmentally conscious vehicles. I think it's the right thing to do, just to keep it aligned with what it is.
There you go. I like that.
Yeah, and I like the stimulus. I like the stimulus checks idea too. Because mm-hmm. this way it will help the poor as opposed to the people who drive it and don't care what the gas prices.
Right.
All right. You've got a fan out Route 80 there, Peter. And we are going to go to Peter, another Peter, Peter in Syosset, back to Long Island, North Shore, who is going to put on the table something that you wrote about. So I'm going to let Peter launch this part of the conversation. Hi, Peter. You're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thanks very much for taking my call. The one comment that I wanted to make is I think that your guest mentioned something about how there were not price controls during World War II. My memory is that there were price controls, not that I was alive then, but that there were price controls during World War II, that there was a board whose job was to make sure that people weren't gouging and to keep prices under reasonable control. Of course, my memory could be completely wrong. Oh, and by the way, also about the gas prices on Long Island, I live in Syosset. There are like bands of prices. If you drive south from Syosset and you get towards Hempstead Turnpike, the prices mm-hmm. there are lower. You go further south onto the South Shore and the prices go back up again. So
right.
I'm not sure what, I don't know why that is, but it is.
Well, so Syosset is pretty much next to Huntington, and our Huntington bureau chief, one of my producers comes from there, says there's a rule in Huntington, basically, where the attendant has to pump the gas for you. It's like little New Jersey in Western Suffolk County.
Okay, I don't get Huntington, so
you don't know.
I don't know about that. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Well, I know.
Price control. Peter, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you. Keep calling us. Peter Coy, Peter's memory, though memory is probably the wrong word because he says he wasn't alive during World War II, was that there were price controls. And sure enough, you wrote an article about this to put it back in the conversation for today. What's some of the history there, and why isn't anybody but you basically raising the idea with prices going up so much?
Okay, there were price controls. I don't not sure how the listener got the idea that I said anything different. There certainly were. I wrote a newsletter about that in February. Now, there were people who read that reacted in different ways. Some people said, how come you're not more in favor of price controls? And others said, how dare you even write about price controls? What an awful idea. Brian, I'm sure you get that all the time.
Yes, that's right.
It comes with the territory. But I actually, in general, I just thought it was very interesting that in 1946, there was a letter written to the New York Times by 11 former presidents of the American Economic Association, including Nobel Prize winners, defending price controls or phasing or being in favor of phasing them out slowly to stop a spike of post-war inflation. You would never see prominent economists like that, you know, mainstream stalwarts of the profession agreeing on something like that today. So I just thought it was fascinating to see a huge difference in the tenor of the conversation around price controls. I tend to think that they're not a good long-term solution, but, you know, maybe after a hurricane or something, there could be an argument. That gets back to the price gouging conversations we were having around gasoline prices.
Right. Well, in situations where price controls worked, if you think they worked to ease the public's pain in general, who did absorb the pain? Because the cost has to be borne somewhere,
yes,
presumably,
you're right.
if there's more demand than supply.
Exactly. So really what happens is you get shortages. It's classic Econ 101. If you set the price below the market clearing level so that the demand at that price exceeds the supply that people are willing to supply at that price, then there won't be enough of the stuff, whatever it is. And so you're forced to resort to other means of distribution aside from the price signals, such as ration coupons. And I really don't think we're in the mood for going to ration coupons for gasoline or any other product right now.
I want to touch on one more column of yours, which came, we should say, just before Russia started the invasion of Ukraine.
Yeah.
And in that one, you asked if economic sanctions could deter Russia from an invasion. Well, now we know that didn't happen. But how much do you think the sanctions as levied so far can cause a quicker or a more just end to the war?
I still think that sanctions clearly are not a cure-all. We've seen that. But they are probably the most valuable tool we have. It's even if it doesn't deter Putin now from waging this war, it'll eventually degrade his ability to continue the war. He's just going to run out of money and resources. That's number one. And number two, it sends a very strong signal to anybody who's ever going to think about trying this again that the allies are able to fight back and that you're going to really, really shoot yourself in the foot by attempting to invade another country.
There we leave it, except I'll throw in this one more interesting tweet that came in, which said, to avoid the surveillance state, the electric vehicle taxes, because that came up with respect to monitoring electric vehicle use, to avoid the surveillance state, the electric vehicle taxes should be metered, just as gas and electricity are. Taxes paid to the power company pays the government. All right, we're going to leave that uncommented on, just as a thought bubble for future conversations here about electric vehicles. And we thank Peter Coy, New York Times economics columnist, for an interesting conversation on a number of these economic fronts today. Peter, we really appreciate it.
Well, I really enjoyed it. Thanks a lot.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.